Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, as we anticipated on Tuesday's show, Vice President J.D. Vance on Tuesday landed in Butte with Air Force Two and then hopped in a motorcade to Dillon. Montana State Auditor James Brown apparently got to meet with J.D. Vance on the tarmac at the airport in Butte. We're going to catch up with him here in just a couple of minutes. But first, I spoke with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines earlier this morning and asked him about, you know, how great it is to have Vice President J.D. Vance in Montana.
You know, it is great. I was actually going to be with J.D. in Montana at the dinner he went to, but I had to change my plans because there's so much going on here in Washington. I had to stay put. We've got so much going on with President Trump's big, beautiful bill, as well as got Doug Burgum here in front of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. He's doing a lot of great work for us in Montana on energy, on the grizzly bears. So I would have loved to have been out in Montana for that evening with J.D., but I had to change my plans the last minute because there's just so much going on here. But it's great to have J.D. in the state. He's just been such a great ally. He's a dear friend of mine. I remember I campaigned for him back in 22 when he was running for the U.S. Senate in Ohio, and got him across the finish line. And he's gone from being the junior senator in Ohio to now being the vice president of the United States, and very proud of what he's doing.
Yeah, so cool to see. I saw State Auditor Jim Brown shared a photo. He got to meet him at the airport, so that was cool to see. Can you share any details on what the vice president was doing in the state? I understand if you can't.
I probably can't, so I'll respect his privacy, Aaron. With all due respect.
Yeah, no, I understand. That's great. Well, that one big beautiful bill here before we get to our first break. I know you're pressing to get this done before the 4th of July deadline. What's it looking like?
Well, lots going on. I tell you, there's a lot of moving parts. But let's step back and remember two things. Number one, this stops the largest tax increase in American history. Every single Democrat's going to vote against this. Number two, it cuts spending by $1.5 trillion. It's one of the largest spending decreases we've seen in any piece of legislation in years here on Capitol Hill. The White House is saying it's an all-time record. I've got to go confirm those facts, but nonetheless, it's a significant reduction in spending. We got to do a whole lot more. I wish we could do a whole lot more. If I was the only vote on this bill, there'd be a whole lot more spending reductions. But I also have to recognize the margins in the House are very narrow. Speaker Johnson got across the finish line with one vote the first time they passed kind of version 1.0. And our margins in the Senate will be very tight as well. In terms of timing, I think we will try to get this across the finish line in the Senate by the end of June and then toss it over to the House and hope that they get that passed before the 4th of July. I know the president would love to see it on his desk on the 4th of July for a gift to the American people, stopping the largest tax increase in American history.
All right, and more of my conversation with Senator Steve Daines talking about the L.A. riots, Montana energy, and more. We'll get to that later in the show. First up, though, State Auditor James Brown is going to call in, I think, right now. So he'll be on next.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, got some great messages on the Montana Talks app. Russ is in Billings, talking about Maxine Waters and the LA riots. According to Mad Maxine, violence is only gun violence. Gun violence is the only time there's violence. All the other violence doesn't count. Yeah, great point, Russ. Thanks for that message. Yeah, we're going to hear from Senator Steve Daines talking about the L.A. riots and much more. Callie in Billings, where do I find the video of the troops doing the Trump dance at Fort Bragg? easiest way to find it, go to x.com/Aaron Flint. It's a classic. I'm telling you, you guys are going to love that video. All right, let's jump right into it here. We've got State Auditor James Brown on the phone lines with us right now. Jim, you got to meet Vice President J.D. Vance yesterday in Butte. What can you tell us about the Vice President's trip?
Yeah, wonderful experience for me, to say the least. So the background on this is that, as you know and have pointed out on the air, I grew up in Dillon, so know the area very well, of course. So about 8 days ago, I got a call from a 202 number, which is a D.C. number, and I generally don't pick up numbers I don't know, but I figure somebody from D.C. worth picking up. And so it was a gentleman with J.D. Vance's advance team saying that the vice president was going to come to Montana. And was going to be in the Dillon area, and would I provide some support to the advance team, and then on the day of arrival to the team, and I got the opportunity to do that, work with his advance team, and we met the vice president on the tarmac yesterday at the Bert Mooney Airport in Butte, and then escorted him down to Dillon, and then back to the airport, and then he flew out again last night.
Yeah, your family ranch, I think when we had you on the show just a week or two ago, you talked about, what, 1882 is when your family ranch first got started here in Montana. So, yeah, you're Dillon, Montana through and through. Can you tell us anything that you said or spoke with the vice president about, or what can you tell us about his trip? I tried to get some info out of Senator Steve Daines, but, you know, understandably, you know, hey, if the vice president was just trying to enjoy a nice private trip to Dillon, Montana, I can understand why you know, some details may not be available.
Yeah. Yeah, I can provide a little more gloss onto what you and the senator talked about. So, so the vice president came in to have a little personal time with he and his wife. So picked him up at the airport tarmac. Now, you can be assured he didn't come here to meet me, for sure. And, of course, the Secret Service was the one that personally escorted him and the second lady down to Dillon. I had the honor of driving the second lady's staff down to Dillon. He came to Dillon to meet with Rupert Murdoch, of course, the head of Fox News. Rupert Murdoch owns a ranch down in the Dillon area, and I was not in the room with them, to say the least. I was outside waiting. But they had dinner together, and then the vice president and his wife took a walk, a little hike and stuff, and had some personal downtime. So I think it was more of a personal visit than it was a business visit, as I understand.
Oh, interesting. So yeah, it's funny because earlier this morning I was making some coffee, and I ran into Mark Wilson, who's one of the breakfast flakes on the Cat Country radio station in Billings. He says, "Hey, what do you think J.D. Vance was doing down in Dillon?" And I said, "Well, this is just speculation, but you know, Rupert Murdoch's got that, what is it, the Matador Ranch down there, and I know Elon Musk and some other folks have spent some time, you know, fly fishing down there. I wonder if that's where he was heading." And I know a lot of our friends in Dillon were speculating, you know, something similar. Any word if Elon Musk was there? Because, you know, Elon Musk was just, what, at the Paws Up Ranch in Missoula, apparently, last week, and J.D. Vance was almost, the vice president was almost going to be in Missoula last week, too.
Yeah, he was. The vice president was scheduled to be at Paws Up, but events happening both in L.A. and at the national level, particularly with the Big Beautiful Bill. As I understand it, kept the vice president from spending some personal time in the Missoula area. I was not aware that if Elon Musk was there. I doubt if he was. In fact, and as you stated, yeah, Rupert Murdoch owns what's called the Matador Ranch, a very historic Beaverhead County ranch. Interesting, the 1882 date that you're talking about, when my great-grandfather came to Montana. The Matador Ranch was a working ranch even before the 1880s. Incredible ranch, for those that don't know about it. Still a working ranch under the Murdochs, about 8,000 head they run. And the amazing thing is it's 340,000 acres on that ranch. Incredible.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, what's funny, I had to joke about this on our website yesterday. You know, people are hearing us on the radio. We're promoting a Visit Montana giveaway.
And each week we're highlighting different tourism regions in Montana. And this week, it's Southwest Montana. And I mentioned on the radio that Beaverhead County is the largest county in Montana as part of our kind of Montana trivia that we're tying into it. So the same week we're promoting Southwest Montana and Visit Montana, the vice president visits Southwest Montana. There you go. I'll take the credit for it, even if it's not deserved.
Yeah, well, yeah, the vice president clearly told me that he had come because you had were promoting Montana on the air.
That's right, that's
so
right.
I did get to briefly talk to the vice president. You know, it's really, the most interesting thing about the whole experience was to see the logistics of providing the vice president and his team safety and the travel logistics and all that thing. So I got to go out on the tarmac. As I stated, I was assigned to be the body man, if you will, for the second lady's staff, drove them, and then, you know, if they needed water or whatever, you know, I would provide that service to them.
That's awesome. That's all. Hey, Jim, hold that thought. Montana State Auditor James Brown on the phone lines. I got to take a quick break, but I want to hear more. And then Tim in Billings is on the phone lines as well. He's got a question for you, if you don't mind taking a phone call. Stand by.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Democrats and Republicans come to bat tonight in the annual congressional baseball game at Nationals Park. The game started in 1909. Pennsylvania Representative John Tenner organized the game. He was a professional baseball player. Democrats throttled Republicans 26-16. They won the first game along with the first six. Republicans are now on a winning streak, having captured the last four contests. In 1914, House Speaker Champ Clark of Missouri became frustrated with the congressional baseball game interfering with legislative business. Clark couldn't get a quorum in the House as it tried to debate a bill related to cotton damage. So Clark dispatched the sergeant-at-arms to American League Field to bring everyone back to Capitol Hill. But rain forced cancellation of the game. House Speaker Sam Rayburn also canceled the game in the late 1950s. There was concern the game had become too violent. The Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call revived the game in the 1960s. Three presidents played while they were members of Congress. Late President Gerald Ford, late President George H.W. Bush, and former President Biden. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
See, now, if I had had the opportunity to meet Vice President J.D. Vance on the tarmac in Butte yesterday, I would have brought him a package of this Power Plus Pain Aid. I would have said, look, hey, if anybody on your staff has trouble keeping up with President Donald J. Trump, I mean, think about the energy you've got to have to keep up the pace of Donald J. Trump, right? But I'd also say this. I'd say, hey, Mr. Vice President, you're a Marine Corps veteran. Our friend Lee Ettinger, Big Fork, he's a Marine Corps veteran. He actually built this product. He was telling me about it during President Trump's inauguration when J.D. Vance was sworn in as vice president. He told me about, you know, his product that he created, Power Plus Pain Aid. It's basically an energy drink that also is combined with pain-relieving vitamins, natural vitamins too, by the way, I should add. And so that's what you've got in this little shot of an energy drink. You've got pain-relieving vitamins that go with it as well. Here's the deal. You don't have to be the vice president to get this product. You can just go to drinkpowerplus.com and you can take 15% off your orders by using the code FLINT15, FLINT15 at checkout. So there you go. Yeah, drinkpowerplus.com. All right, James Brown, Montana State Auditor. So what did you tell the vice president when you got a chance to meet him? And then what else do you want to tell folks across Montana?
Yeah, so this was a really amazing experience. So you meet with the advance team and then the Secret Service folks right ahead of time because they know you're going to be around the vice president. And the instructions are to not talk to the vice president, don't take pictures of him because he's got stuff to do. And then what they tell you is you know, as part of the benefit of helping out the vice president and his team, you get to have a picture with the vice president and get to meet him briefly as he's about to go wheels up back to D.C. And so I only got to speak to him very, very briefly right at the end of the trip on the tarmac as he was getting ready to board the plane back to D.C. And got a picture with him, as you've posted, or going to post, and I just told him, you know, thanks so much for his service, very pleased that he and President Trump were president and vice president, and then he just gave me some laudatory things saying, thank you for the help and great work, and Montana's been very supportive of President Trump, and that was about it. But he was very gracious, and it was a wonderful opportunity. Like I said, I got to spend more time with his staff and then the second lady's staff, which was a neat experience. And
I thought it was so richly symbolic that he flew into Butte as well, because, you know, Butte is a working town. It's a union town. And that's how J.D. Vance grew up. That's the country that he's fighting for, is the working class towns, especially some of those union towns back east that have just been destroyed by the America Last agenda. And that's what he and Donald Trump are working to rebuild. Hold that thought. Yeah, State Auditor James Brown, we've got Tim and Billings on the phone lines with a question for you. Tim, great to hear from you. Did you have a quick question or comment for the State Auditor?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, I kind of feel like the office manager coming through saying, all right, break it up here at the water cooler. Time to get back to work.
But, no, that's good.
My question for Mr. Brown is this. If I recall right, the state auditor used to be called the insurance commissioner in the state of Montana until like 2010, somewhere around that area. Has your office received an inordinate amount of complaints regarding skyrocketing homeowners insurance specifically? Because myself and several people I know, my rates doubled just in the last couple of months, and I've had to shop some different rates. And I suspect that the company that we were under is trying to get out of Montana. And is there a way to keep these companies from coming in? You know, they sign everybody up, they jack up the rates, and then they decide, well, this is no longer a profitable market for us, and we're going to hand the baton off to the next company. I mean, it kind of feels like there's some backdoor deals that go on. And if I recall correctly, are we in some sort of pool that includes California with how we are insured when it comes to natural disaster weather-related incidents? And how do we break from that, if that is the case?
Yeah, no, great questions all around, Tim. And Jim, yeah, we had you on the show back on June 2nd, so, you know, about a week or so ago. But, yeah, hey, I know not everybody, you know, can catch every single hour of the show, but we had a full hour talking about all of these issues. But how would you summarize your response to Tim's questions there?
Yeah, and what we talked about last time I was on the show, you and I are going to be together later this month, the Big Sky Month, Montana, for the meeting of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, where you are going to have the ability to interview state insurance commissioners from all across the United States to talk about these issues. But the short answer to Tim's question is, yes, we are receiving complaints at the agency for skyrocketing homeowners insurance policies, but the fact of the matter, unfortunately, is that insurance products of all types are seeing price increases. To the thrust of his question about what I can do about that, honestly, the legislature, who directs what I can do at my office, as you can imagine, has not given me the power to necessarily deny insurance rates outright, or to set what I think is the appropriate premium is. It's only given me the authority to look at three things when you have an insurance company seeking to do business in Montana: whether their rates are excessive. And we base that basically on a formulaic measurement as to whether the amount that's being requested is supported, whether the rate's too low so that the insurance company might go out of business, which would be bad for the consumer. And then the third criteria we look at is to see if the insurance product is discriminatory, either as across the lines or if it violates some kind of federal law where they're trying to charge Native Americans or something more like that.
And well, and this whole idea of breaking free from the California, you know, from being, you know, basically under the California pricing, essentially. We talked about it back on June 2nd. It's on our podcast, but we're going to talk about that more in depth. Again, that's why why I want to be at that National Association of Insurance Commissioners meeting in Big Sky with you, is because I want to talk with them about, you know, and other Western states in particular, about how we can work to break free free so we all don't suffer because of failed policies in California. So, and I know that's exactly why you're helping to put that together as well. Jim Brown, great to hear from you. Thanks so much for calling in once again. It was great to get some inside info on the vice president's visit yesterday. So thanks for calling in. All right, back to it. I was chatting with Senator Steve Daines earlier this morning. You got to hear what he had to say about Vice President Vance's trip to Montana. Here you go. Here's more. All right, back to it here with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines. Senator, we were talking about that one big beautiful bill, and yeah, I totally agree with you that we all want to see more spending reductions. I mean, I think that's why I'm pleased to see that the House of Representatives now is moving forward with rescissions packages after they got their first hack at the one big beautiful bill. But more to follow on that front. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that, you know, folks like Ted Cruz and others have been saying that they think that conservatives have a better shot in the Senate than they do the House right now, which is an interesting turn of events.
Well, I tell you, we're working hard on this, and the key number in the Senate is 50+1. We might have to have J.D. Vance break the tie, and the key number in the House is 218. And so we push as hard as we can, as aggressively as we can here on the tax cut side, but equal passion on the spending cut side. And that's where the biggest problem in the country right now in terms of the fiscal situation is primarily on the out of control spending. I mean, $37 trillion of debt, $1 to $2 trillion deficits annually now for the foreseeable future. And it really was ignited during the COVID years under Biden. Remember, and we got to bring it back to when I was on the show during the Biden years, we were battling the Democrats, and we were losing these votes because Kamala Harris was breaking the tie. The margins were so tight. We didn't have the votes to stop them, passing these multi-trillion-dollar spending bills that we just could not stop. We didn't have the votes. Well, good news, Trump's elected. We get Tim Sheehy to the Senate. We flip the U.S. Senate back to Republican control, and now we're back on offense to stop a massive tax increase and actually start cutting spending versus these explosive cash cannons the Democrats were launching during the COVID years.
California has certainly been a sanctuary state for illegal aliens, a sanctuary state for rioters and looters, as we're seeing on full display right now. It seems like if we need to save a little bit more money, we can pull back a lot of money from the state of California, especially given the fraud that's taken place there.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some of these blue states have just been openly fraudulent on what they're doing of abusing important safety nets like Medicaid, as an example. They're just it's abusing it with the fraud. But let me say something about California and Los Angeles. Remember that when ICE went into L.A., ICE is prioritizing arresting and deporting the worst of the worst of the illegal aliens that are in our country. Remember, Biden allows millions into the country. So ICE has a huge task in front of them. And part of that big, beautiful bill, by the way, is to give additional resources to ICE, additional cells, detention beds, so when ICE grabs these guys, they can hold them before they deport them. But remember, they're going in first and foremost to get the criminals. So these illegal aliens who are also convicted criminals, those who fled jail cells out of Venezuela and other places, came across the southern border, ICE is going after the hardened criminals first. There were 120 of them in Los Angeles. And so these riots literally are protesting ICE taking criminals illegally here off the street. Thank God for President Trump's heavy hand to stop this anarchy, the burning police vehicles, because this is a cancer that can spread across the country. It needs to be stopped here in Los Angeles.
All right. And by the way, on that front, there are radical left-wing protests that they're planning for this weekend across Montana. If you look at the website, they're calling it No Kings. If you look at their website, there's dots all across the map where they're trying to plan these radical left-wing protests here in Montana this weekend on Flag Day, the 250th birthday of the U.S. Army, and it's also President Trump's birthday. And so, Montana, be ready. Be ready, because it's most likely just going to be a bunch of the washed-out old hippies trying to relive what they perceive to be their glory days. But, man, we've had Antifa types get arrested in Montana very recently, so don't fall for their antics, don't fall into their trap, and don't do what they want you to do. Stay peaceful.
This is where Montana talks at, with Lane Nordlund.
Now that spring planting is pretty much wrapped up, ag producers should make an appointment with their local Farm Service Agency county office to complete crop acreage reports before their deadlines. July 15th is a major deadline for most crops, but acreage reporting deadlines may vary by county and crop. To file a crop acreage report, producers need to provide a number of facts, including crop type or variety and the number of crop acres. More information can be found at fsa.usda.gov or by contacting your local FSA office. Looking to other news, the American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, has extended the deadline for entrepreneurs to apply online for the 2026 Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge to June 15th. Now in year number 12, the national business competition showcases U.S. startup companies developing innovative solutions to challenges faced by America's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. The overall winner of the competition receives $100,000 in startup funds. The runner-up will be awarded $25,000, and two additional business owners who advance to the final four round will receive $10,000. If you have a vision for how your business can drive agriculture forward, apply today. Again, that application deadline period closes on June 15th. Visit fb.org/challenge for details. I'm Lane Northland.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, so just a couple more minutes here of my conversation with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines. Like I said, I caught up with him earlier this morning before he went into Montana Coffee. They do every Wednesday on Capitol Hill. So a couple more minutes of that. And then I want to share part of my conversation with Derek A. Stryker, who is the chief legal counsel for the Montana Family Foundation. I would have had him live on the show today, but he was busy today. Would have had him on yesterday, but we had the Joker in the house, and so that's always fun. So I'm going to sneak in part of that conversation here today. But, yeah, let's see. Where do we go next here with Senator Steve Daines? Ah, energy. That's right. Okay, here we go. Let's pick up where we left off. The Vice President Vance back here in Montana, but you've got work to do back there. One of those topics, energy, in meeting with Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. Lots of great news for coal and coal strip and the Bull Mountains mine south of Roundup as well. There's a lot of, you know, folks that are wondering if maybe we could be on track to reopen coal strip 1 and 2, given all these positive developments.
Look, just yesterday, conversation I'm having here in Washington with utility CEOs, we have an energy deficit right now, Aaron. There's not enough energy being produced in America going forward to meet the demands of the future economy. As you look about AI and the data centers and so forth, they're energy intensive. We need more baseload power. That's exactly what coal produces, is reliable, affordable baseload power to support the next generation of our economy and the technology breakthroughs. This is critical to beat China on the global competition stage. China's been a lot smarter than we have in terms of an all-the-above energy approach. They're building coal-fired plants, but we're shutting them down in America. And coal strip is a gift to our country. Baseload power is cool again. Everybody wants it. Thank God that Trump was elected, because I think we were one election away from the Biden administration and the green crazy left shutting down the rest of the coal plants in America. And then we would have been in much, much more difficult condition. Now we've got hope as we start to expand coal production again. Very important part of our all-the-above energy portfolio.
And think about it. We couldn't have this if it wasn't for the success of the Montana Republican Party over the last few years. Big thanks to the leadership of Don Kay, the chairman of the GOP. He's not running for re-election here in a couple of weeks, but you know, with about a minute to go here, what a remarkable tenure he's had.
Well, he has. Remember, Aaron, going back when I first ran for the U.S. House in 2012, there was one statewide elected Republican and seven Democrats. Today, we are Republican across the board. Kudos to Don Kay. They're up in Whitefish. And I asked Don Kay to stay on one more term. He served three terms as chairman of the state GOP. He's a U.S. Marine, a businessman, a wonderful husband and father, a wonderful American, great patriot, strong supporter of Trump. And I asked Don to stay on for one more term so he gets Sheehy elected. and complete that complete sweep of Republicans across the state of Montana. So I just a tribute to Don Kay, what he has done. He's left a legacy behind of moving Montana to being a red state, and God bless Don Kay and all his work.
All right, there you go. Full conversation with Senator Steve Daines will be on our Montana Talks podcast. Also, my conversation with Derek A. Stryker from the Montana Family Foundation. I mentioned he was busy today, and we already had John Jackson as our guest sidekick on the show Tuesday. But this was big news. So really two different stories that came out Monday, almost simultaneously, by the way. I was already planning to have a conversation with Derek A. Stryker because they just filed a major legal challenge to Constitutional Initiative CI-128. So I was, you know, emailing back and forth with Derek to get him on the show to talk about that. And then almost simultaneously, I then got the Montana Supreme Court Digest with their latest ruling that got handed down. And so that was the other big news. On Monday, the Montana Supreme Court, which is dominated by, you know, a left-wing majority, just struck down three pro-life laws from the 2021 legislative session. And these were common sense pro-life laws, like you know, no abortions after 20 weeks. If Planned Parenthood does an ultrasound, which we know they do, they should offer it to women and just say, do you want to see this or do you not want to see it? But at least let the women know that there is an ultrasound available. But no, they even rejected that and said, nope, you can't tell Planned Parenthood to let women know that they performed an ultrasound on them. I mean, it's just crazy, this left-wing mob on the Montana Supreme Court. But, of course, you know, many of these justices were bankrolled by Planned Parenthood, so it's no surprise that they're then paying off their campaign contributors with, you know, decisions like this. So that was in the news earlier this week. Three pro-life laws were struck down by the Montana Supreme Court. Okay, to hear Derek's reaction to that news, check out our Montana Talks podcast. But what I want to focus in on for a few minutes here is this petition to overturn CI-128, the radical abortion initiative that was on the ballot last November.
Derek, I remember last summer, I was able to catch up with Rob Nadelson, a constitutional law professor at the University of Montana, former constitutional law professor. He's now with the Independence Institute. But he did a big legal review of CI-128, which was the radical abortion initiative. And he found several legal flaws in that initiative. And I remember talking with him last year, and he said, look, even if this thing gets passed with this deceptive language, There are severe legal problems with it that could eventually get it overturned. And so, anyway, tell us about this new petition that you've just filed.
Yeah, no, and I really respect Professor Nadelson, and obviously he did some great work in picking through the deceptive language. Our petition is kind of based on the fact that that deceptive language wasn't even presented to the voters. So when we take a look at our Montana Constitution, which of course is new in terms of the state, because we had an original constitution from 1889, and we ratified a new constitution in 1972. In 1972, one of the new rights was a citizen initiative process to provide the citizens with an opportunity to amend the Constitution. And during the debates on that amendment, there was some discussion of, hey, can we actually present these full-blown amendments to the electorate and have them figure out what they're voting for? And one of the delegates, I think it was Delegate Blaylock, said, well, yeah, we're presenting this entire new constitution to the electorate and trusting them to figure that out. I think we can do one amendment at a time. So in 1974 and again in 1976, we had constitutional initiatives on the ballot. The first one was CI-1 in 1974, and that's why we have biennial legislative sessions. That was passed by the electorate, and the full text of that initiative was on the ballot. Same thing in 1976. When we amended our statutes in 1977, something changed, and we took the full text off of the ballot. but it was required by the 1972 Constitution. In Article 14, Section 9 and Subsection 3, it requires, quote, the proposed amendment, end quote, be presented to the qualified electors for approval or rejection. And the nice thing about our challenge is that Article 14 has been evaluated by our Montana Supreme Court previously. There was a constitutional amendment in the 1980s that was struck down by the Montana Supreme Court because they didn't follow Article 14, Section 9, Subsection 2, which required the full text of the amendment to be published by the Secretary of State. And they said, you know, it's not good enough to just put an attorney general's summary or an explanatory statement or some short title of the constitutional amendment out there for the public. They have a right to know exactly what they're voting on. Well, that same rationale applies to the actual ballot. And then there's a second prong to our challenge, because that case from the 1980s that our Supreme Court overturned a constitutional amendment at that time, that was before same-day voter registration was permitted in Montana. We enacted same-day voter registration back in 2006. Well, we have a couple petitioners in our challenge who are election day registrants. They registered to vote on election day. They waited 7 hours. One of our petitioners waited 7 hours in line in Cascade County just to register to vote. But yet she was never provided with an opportunity to evaluate the full text of this constitutional amendment, something that's going to change the fundamental document of our state. And she has no idea what she was voting on. And that seems to be an equal protection violation, if there ever was one, because we're treating voters differently. We're weighing votes differently in the state of Montana.
Derek. All right, so we'll hold it right there. Another interesting point that Derek A. Stryker made ties in with the 2026 Supreme Court elections here in Montana. Stand by. CBS.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. I won't be able to get to all of our conversation with Derek A. Stryker from the Montana Family Foundation, but definitely want to share a little bit more, especially on this petition to overturn CI 128. Hey, in the meantime, if you've got something you want to share, send us a message on the Montana Talks app, or if you call in 406-294-0970, I may be able to sneak you on before we run out of time for today. I haven't even checked the calendar for tomorrow yet. Oh, we'll have Congressman Troy Downing doing a brief check-in tomorrow. Should have time to take your phone calls, barring something crazy happening tomorrow in the meantime as well. One thing I wanted to say before we get back into this petition to overturn CI 128. So I mentioned how there were three very reasonable pro-life laws from the 2021 legislative session. I think even people who might describe themselves as pro-choice would even agree these were very reasonable pro-life laws that were passed and signed into law back in 2021 by Governor Gianforte. But yet the mob majority, the left-wing mob majority in the Montana Supreme Court is so radical that they even overturned these common sense provisions, you know, barring late term abortions, for example, or, you know, having these abortion mill providers like Planned Parenthood offer up as an option for women to be able to view the ultrasound. But these very same so-called pro-choice advocates don't want women to have the choice to view the ultrasound or not. They want to hide that from these women before making a decision that could affect them for the rest of their lives, right? That's how twisted this liberal mob majority is on the Montana Supreme Court right now. So here's the thing: because we now have a new Chief Justice and another new justice on the court, they had to rely on district court judges to issue that opinion, to issue that ruling from earlier in the week. One of the district judges that they relied upon is a district judge named Amy Eddy. And this was a point that Derek A. Stryker made. We've already heard this. Ron and Big Fork has called in. We've had other folks tell us that Amy Eddy, this judge in Flathead County, is a far left, soft on crime, Soros style judge. She was part of this ruling, and she is already proving that she is in the back pocket of these far left groups like Planned Parenthood. So that was another point that Derek A. Stryker had made with the Montana Family Foundation. But back to this whole conversation, again, this is separate from those pro-life initiatives. This is talking about CI 128 and how they violated the process in order to get that ballot initiative, that very deceptively worded ballot initiative, across the finish line.
So if the Montana Supreme Court were to follow their own precedent, were to follow the Constitution, the state Constitution here, they should be able to put aside their radical abortion views and just simply look at the democratic process and how this is supposed to work according to their own rulings, and that alone should strike down CI 128.
That's exactly right, Aaron. We're just asking the court to follow its own precedent, to follow what they've already decided, and it's not about abortion at all. This is an election law, a constitutional challenge. It has nothing to do with abortion. And the fact of the matter is, the status quo is that abortion, up until the moment of viability in Montana, is already permitted. So the status quo isn't changing. If they rule in favor of our petition, abortion will still be allowed in Montana. So they're not jeopardizing that abortion right. So abortion isn't part of this challenge. What's at stake here is if they deny the petition or somehow strike down our challenge, they're actually amending the Constitution twice. Not only will they be allowing the Constitution to be amended by CI 128, but they'll also be amending Article 14, Section 9, Subsection 3, because they'll be saying, on the one hand, yeah, you have to publish the full text of the amendment under Subsection 2, but you don't have to present the actual language of the amendment on the ballot.
All right. Another very interesting angle here. I'm going to have to fast forward here. Like I say, the full audio is on our Montana Talks podcast with Derek A. Stryker here. The other angle is, I know many of you are sitting back and you're thinking, okay, so they file a petition with the Montana Supreme Court. But the Montana Supreme Court is ruled by a bunch of partisan left-wing activists. So you know, the likelihood of them respecting the law or the process is very low. So can they take the appeal to the federal courts?
Yeah, that's a good question, Aaron. Yeah, we have put some federal claims in our petition. I mean, when I talked about the Election Day voter registrants, we have an equal protection clause under the Montana Constitution. We also have our equal protection clause of the 14th Amendment in the U.S. Constitution. So that's our federal hook there. Should the Montana Supreme Court deny our petition or rule against us on this challenge, we still have...
All right, now the reason why he said this needed to be filed now with the Montana Supreme Court is because CI 128 is scheduled to take effect less than a month from now, July 1st. So that's why this action needed to be taken now. Like I say, full audio with Derek A. Stryker on the Montana Talks podcast.